Laura Lee Online. www.laura.com.
Hello there, I'm Laura Lee. Thank you for joining us tonight. Do you get the feeling that our medicine is highly technically and supposedly advanced as it is, the way that we conduct medicine today, you know, surgery, operations, cutting things out, chemicals, drugs and all of that, is just a bit in the dark ages? I mean, with the general concept. Don't you love watching Star Trek and they just hold a device up that emits some sort of electromagnetic vibration over the patient, or they either read from it or they send that signal in and poof, person's cured. I wait for that day. Seems to me the general concept utilizes the physics that is the leading edge. That is, that the world is made up of vibrations, and if you change the vibration, you can do some interesting things, have some interesting effects. There is a medicine like that, the medicine of vibration. There are devices out there, if you know where to look for them, that operate on this general basis and idea. And our guest tonight, James Baer, who is a chiropractor and one of the leading researchers on the RIFE, that's R-I-F-E, the Royal RIFE device, is here to tell us all about it. Hi, James.
Well, good evening, Laura. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about Royal RIFE, who he was, and this particular device that you've been working on for some years.
Yes, for the listeners in the audience that are not familiar with who Royal RIFE is, Dr. RIFE was one of the greatest geniuses of the 20th century, and sadly most of his work has been swept under the table and dusted away into a closet somewhere, but the legacy he left behind still exists in various scientific papers, newspaper articles, and such. Dr. RIFE invented, in a short synopsis, invented a device far ahead of its time, a device that used a type of resonance, a fixed radio frequency was somehow manipulated, perhaps in a pulse node or what have you, and this radio frequency energy was used to excite a gas-filled tube. And emanating from that tube was a wave, and that wave had unique properties. Properties really, what they would do is they would interact with the body, and by tuning an exact frequency, you could induce certain physiologic effects in the body. You could also, by tuning the exact frequencies, destroy microorganisms, and later Dr. RIFE found you could treat cancer with it too, and you could destroy it with this exact frequency. Now, we use these type of frequencies these days, for those of you that have had a magnetic resonant image scan done, they use a variable radio frequency transmitter that they pump through your body while you're inside that big magnetic coil, and your body resonates.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. RIFE was doing something similar here, except without the big magnet, 70 years ago. It was all documented. There were multiple machines that were made. There were doctors that were involved. A dinner was held in Dr. RIFE's honor, a black tie dinner with over, I think, like 30 or 40 physicians that were there and attended, and it was called the end of all disease or something like that. Phenomenal thing. Just doesn't happen these days. This is back in the 1930s.
Yeah.
Dr. RIFE invented this device, had it operational, and by the mid-1930s, approximately 1934, a group of physicians at the University of Southern California got involved with Dr. RIFE and started holding clinics using his instrument. And a lot of these clinics were held at the Scripps Ranch there in San Diego. Scripps, big publishing empire, for those of you who are familiar with it. And they treated cancer patients and people with cataracts and other infectious diseases with this device. And they had phenomenal effects and phenomenal results. And these clinics went on about once or twice a year, as I understand, through, the late 30s. And then, of course, World War II came along and such, which is another saga in the history of Dr. RIFE. But basically the device and all the effects that it produced became lost. It became, shall we say, squashed. Those doctors that were using the device were basically told to stop using it or lose their license, prosecuted. Some had drive-by shootings back in the 40s occur to them, way before drive-by
shootings.
They've
burnt the patients shooting at them. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah.
So why? If it's working, and just because it steps outside the current paradigm back then, what was so dangerous about this device? Was it so effective? Why was it so funny?
Yes, it was that effective. And the tragedy is it was lost. And the other tragedy is it was a different way of doing things. It was a different way of treating patients. And unfortunately, some physicians recognized that. They were true physicians. They saw the bottom line is, how do I best treat my patient? How do I best take care of this patient's problem? And they found this device worked. And so they started using it. And there was a group of other physicians, shall we say, and entrenched interests that found this a threat to their livelihood. They found that they were raised from a pharmaceutical standpoint, that you treat a disease, you treat an infection by throwing some chemical on it. And goodness knows, you know, that does work to some degree, no question about it. I think most of us can safely say we at one time or another have had some pretty bad infections and have treated them with antibiotics quite successfully.
But there's two different ways of going around and treating an infection. An infection is when you've got an overload of a particular bacteria, say, in your system. So you've got these bacteria trucking all over your system, multiplying. You can either go in with a chemical that might harm some good cells as well as try to take out the bacteria, right?
Yeah.
Or explain what the Rife device does and what you can see under the microscope.
Well, here's the wonders of the original Rife instrument. It was frequency specific. So in other words, if you have a particular infection, say tuberculosis or staphylococcus or streptococcus, you'd use a specific radio frequency to key that one organism, and it would touch nothing else. Pretty amazing. No side effects, per se, outside of whatever side effects there might be from the death of that organism. Some organisms, when they die, release little proteins and produce these rather nasty little reactions in the body. But that's not really a direct effect or toxic effect from the actual use of the device. Very different. Very different.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of potential with these instruments, but these devices, for the most part, and Dr. Rife's original device was lost. Lost back starting about the mid-40s.
Now, how could it be lost? Didn't he leave records? And you said that there were hundreds of them built in the 30s, so they were widely distributed. Couldn't you find an antique one?
Not too sure it was in the hundreds, but let's say somewhere under 100, but still enough out there where they were in circulation. Dr. Rife, unfortunately, got involved in a very bad business deal, and it went sour on the man, and he wound up in court. And the stress of his being in court agitated him quite a bit, and he started drinking. And unfortunately, he had a predilection towards alcoholism, and he became an alcoholic. And it essentially destroyed the man, destroyed his inventive genius in many ways. And a lot of things having to do with the device and what happened to it were lost were just scattered to the wind. Some material wound up in Canada. Some material wound up in San Diego, some on the East Coast, some in the middle of the United States. By the late 40s, early 50s, most of what once existed had been either tied up by some individual somewhere wanting an immense amount of money for what they do have, and whether it's a lot of value or not is questionable.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it seems to me that when something is outwardly unavailable or made illegal, then it goes underground. And if this was such a breakthrough at the time and had so many fans out there among physicians and patients, wouldn't you think that someone would just quietly keep a device or two and for their own use if they couldn't use it on their patients, that somewhere, somehow somebody kept some of these active?
Well, actually, there were a few that were built in the late 40s. One was just discovered here recently. It was still operational to some degree. Got pictures of that I posted a couple on my website. There's other pictures, a full set of pictures on another website called www.rife.org.
Uh-huh. And what is your website address?
It's www.rt66, Route 66.com/tildemark, full sideways S, RifeTech, RifeTech. Or they can just do a search for Rife /Bare, B-A-R-E.
Okay. What's your last name?
I'll pop up probably about 50, 60 times at least.
Okay. Just like, and we have a link to you on the Laura Lee Show website as well.
Thank you.
And have had so for a long time. By the way, in the past you've been one of our most popular guests, so I want you to know people are very, very interested to this day. Of course, this technology at some point is going to have to be rediscovered and become part of the mainstream technology of medicine at some point in the future, wouldn't you say?
Well, the original Rife instrument...
Or this general idea, let's put it that way.
The general idea, yes, shall. Frequency therapies are coming of age, and there's a gigantic underground movement going on right now, kind of worldwide, as a matter of fact, since I brought out my device here about 4 or 5 years ago, which is it's based on Dr. Rife's principles, but it's different at the same time. And I'll go into that a little bit here in a minute, but I want to touch on what's going on out there from an underground viewpoint. Underground, for years, there were type of frequency generators available that were similar in some ways to a modified muscle stimulator with electrode pads. You know what? They work to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
They do have physiological effects, and a lot of people owe their health to them, no question. They do have limitations. They are basically an electrical device, so they don't penetrate real well sometimes, and it's hard to get a lot of energy into areas sometimes where you'd really like it to be. This was the genius of Dr. Rife using this plasma tube, this plasma wave emission. And we have a kind of an acronym for this. It's called PEFT, which is Plasma Emission Frequency Therapy. People should note that down because that's going to become a lot more wide known as time goes by. And basically what happens is we take a frequency of sorts and dump it into this gas plasma, which then re-radiates this wave, which has these tremendous physiologic effects. It penetrates bodies effortlessly without any trouble at all. Now, there's a difference here. Well, hold on. I'm losing my track. I want to go back to where we were talking about this underground.
Okay.
The underground aspect of this is that right now in the world, I have a book which is carried by your bookstore, and it tells you how to construct my device and make it work. Join the several, we estimate between 4,000 and 5,000 other people that now have built one of my devices. And that's not an exaggeration. The actual device right now is generated kind of a small mini industry. There's people producing parts for this worldwide.
And I just want to mention the title of your book, Resonant Frequency Therapy, Building the Rife Beam Ray Device. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. It's a small but growing industry that has worldwide parts manufacturers. There's parts being made in the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, Italy, of course the United States, several countries that I probably can't think of right at the moment. I think there's bits and pieces being made in the Netherlands, things like that. But there's a lot of different individuals involved producing parts for it, and cumulatively between all of them, you might say it's probably pushing a small multi-million-dollar business worldwide in sales of these parts for all these instruments that are going together. Now, these instruments, for the most part, are all, shall we say, underground. They're not really out in wide-open usage, although people do use them on their friends and neighbors, and they use them on their own families, of course. And there's a growing group of physicians now using these in their practices. Most of them do this kind of on the QT. They selectively choose the patients they want to treat with this and how they want to treat it. And usually they use these instruments as an adjunctive treatment. It's not necessarily primary.
Oh, that's a good point. And there have been some stunning success stories, which you'll tell us about later this hour. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. Well, the adjunctive aspect is that most of us are, especially with chronic illness, we have these illnesses because there's something very wrong with our physiology. And just taking and zapping somebody and going, well, there we go, we've taken care of that little infection there. Well, why did that person get down to get that infection in the first place? See, so that has to be treated as part of it. And especially if you want to talk about cancer or something like that, those people have very serious metabolic imbalances that need to be addressed. And as such, I'll state quite clearly, and I want everybody to understand this, my advice is not a cure for cancer. I want to make that real clear. It's not a cure for cancer. People have used it as an adjunctive treatment in the treatment of cancer.
Okay.
And they've had, many times they've had good results, and sometimes there are no results, just like any other thing. And that's the way life is. Nothing's 100%, but it works, and it does work often enough, the results are very encouraging.
What does the device look like? Can you describe it, and how hard
that's
is it,
okay,
or easy is it to build?
Let me talk a little bit about my instrument and what it is.
And what do you call it? Yeah.
Okay. It's current terminology is people are calling it a Rife Bearer instrument.
Okay, Rife, R-I-F-E, that's Royal Rife, and B-A-R-E, that's you.
Yes.
That's a good name for it.
It's kind of stuck. I didn't name it.
Yeah.
Kind of stuck.
Well, it determines it's your version of this device as opposed to someone else's, right?
Exactly. Okay. My device, by the way, is patented at the moment.
Good for you.
I have a U.S. patent on it. I have 2 foreign patents pending, and there's some accessories things that are also pending elsewhere, which have to do with other aspects of the instrument. The device can be anywhere from a small box, you might say, with all the parts inside it, maybe a box about a foot high and a foot and a half wide, maybe a foot deep, to a large, most people when they self-build them, they'll put them on like a microwave cart, or they'll put them on a TV stand or something like that. So it could be just to spread the parts out. But I'll tell you, in a nutshell, all it consists of, we take a citizens band radio, believe it or not,
mm-hmm.
and there's a reason for that, and that is the Federal Communications Commission has set aside a specific frequency right in the middle of the CB band for use with what's called ISM instruments, or industrial, scientific, and medical instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And CB radios run at that frequency.
Hmm.
So it gives us a very inexpensive way to get our primary transmitter.
Clever. And how nice of the government to choose the right frequency, right?
Oh, indeed. Well, they thought they were just, you know, the 27 megacycle band there, which is what CBs operate on, are kind of a trash band as far as they were concerned. They wouldn't do with it. Well, you know what? It worked wonders for us. At any rate, we take this little citizens band radio, we do some little tricks to it, and from a radio standpoint, for those that may be amateur hands out there, what basically we wind up with is what's called a suppressed carrier dual sideband output. And in a nutshell, that's basically what that means is that the little CB radio, which before made 4 watts, when we finish with them, some of them now make 50 watts.
Just a quick aside. I know you're a chiropractor by profession, but you also must be into electronics and good at tinkering around with things.
Well,
this must be.
yes. In all honesty,
some people have a green thumb for plants, and some people just have a hand for this kind of thing.
I agree. All of us have these unique talents, and if we look hard enough, sooner or later, we're going to find those things we're good at. Not everybody can throw a football. Not everybody can, you know, run a...
Turn a C band radio into a Rife device. Come on.
But other people can do things like that. Exactly.
Okay.
And I've always played with electronics since I was a teenager. Just had a fascination with them. I'm not an electrical engineer by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm kind of a gadgeteer.
Kind of shows. But go ahead, James.
Okay. Well, anyhow, we take this little TV radio and turn it into this little screamy monster, you might say, and we then dump the output of that into an amplifier, which amplifies all the little harmonics that are now being generated by this radio. And it steps up the power into all these harmonics, where before, say, maybe a harmonic might have, a tenth or you know, half a watt of power to it when it comes out of the other end of the linear amplifier, all of a sudden it's got 10 or 15 amps or watts of power behind it. A little trick there. And it steps up this resonance effect. That's what we're after. We're trying to, like, make this incredibly loud tone that the body hears to shake things. Just like standing beside a 2,000-watt amplifier with a, you know, 14-inch speaker or something on it, and just rattle your teeth. Well, you don't feel it that way, like an audio wave, but it is similar in some ways, because about half the population can feel the wave off this instrument. And it creates a field, but from the amplifier, we take and we put this into what's called an antenna tuner, which is just basically a matcher. It just matches our final stage, which is a plasma tube. Now, there's a big difference between my instrument and Dr. Reif's. And Dr. Reif's instrument, his original instrument, used a high voltage to fire the tube. It also used only radio frequencies to produce its resonance effects. Well, the world's changed from the 1930s and 40s, where there weren't that many radio transmitters, and cell phones didn't exist, and TVs didn't hardly exist, and so on and so forth.
So that band has got kind of crowded, and you also have technology that would give you other options to accomplish the same end, right?
That's correct.
And you utilize those other options.
Some people have played with that, but that you have to have proper shielding and things if you're going to be doing that, where you don't go around turning everybody's garage doors open and closed and TV blank out and things like that. One of the things we do that is also different than Dr. Reif's is that we use an audio frequency with a fixed radio frequency. Dr. Reif, as far as we can tell, uses no audio frequencies. We use a variable audio frequency. And we drive the CB with this little audio frequency generator. Now, there's a whole variety of these that are now being produced. They have little handheld computer wonders that are just astounding pieces of programming that have been custom made for the device. There are plug-in cards for your computer. There's other type of hardware, software combinations you can get to run on your computer, handheld instruments of all sorts that generate these frequencies. And it's a different concept, but it still produces that selectivity that Dr. Reif had, but in a different way. Instead of varying our radio frequency to get the selectivity, we vary our audio frequency to get the selectivity.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in so doing, we can shake things, and we can shake them pretty hard. And things do break. There's been some of this cold and flu that's been running around here this year. There are frequency sets people have worked out, and results generally are within 24 to 36 hours. People just walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Done with.
Good.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. Because you're actually going in there, what's actually happening in the body? Why don't you describe what effect this has?
Okay. We know that there's probably at least three or four different things going on in the body. One of them seems to be sometimes there is a stimulation to the immune system. The immune system seems to perk up. The white blood cells, and you can see this on a microscope, they just perk up and they move faster and they become more aggressive. Don't know why, it just happens. And so in other words, per unit time, a single white blood cell will sweep and clean a much larger area than it would otherwise. It's like increasing the number of white blood cells you have without actually doing so. Another effect that it has is in certain frequencies will cause a slight vasodilation. In other words, the blood vessels enlarge slightly, and you get more blood flow in areas where it didn't used to be. And that helps clean things and detoxify and move white blood cells and the immune system and antibodies in such areas where it needs to be in enough quantities to cause results. Other effects have to do with direct resonance effects upon the area. We can, for example, like the nervous system, we can sedate it. You can actually take and put people to sleep with the device. It's quite sedating on certain frequencies, and others are quite stimulating. Certain frequencies, if I run them late at night, I'm staring at the walls at 3 a.m. in the morning. My body will not relax.
Better than coffee.
Exactly. We have the capability of, you might say, playing the body like a musical instrument in some ways. I've seen individuals, shall we say, we'll talk about the nervous system, that have Parkinson's disease, and they have these tremors in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
You put them in the field of this device, and the tremors stop. I've seen that several times. But it's not permanent.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody could figure out a way to make a small device that perhaps a person could wear, there might be some potential there for actual treatment of the disease. But it's a simple thing. I've even had one lady report back to me that she uses, who is subject to seizures, that if she feels a seizure coming on, she turns on her device and it stops the seizure.
Oh, wow.
Of course, once she's had the seizure, well, it won't bring her out of it. That's that. It just, she just goes into it. But it does stop her seizures. Pretty phenomenal things that the device can do. That's just in the nervous system.
Yeah.
Now, if we get on to an infectious organism in the body, and mind you, most of us, we think, well, gee, we're living a pretty healthy lifestyle, and I've done all this and that, and I've detoxed. Well, in reality, our bodies are a great place to grow all kinds of things. And a lot of them are just kind of right along parasitic type, you might say, infections. And they're not really in a large enough level to cause us major health problems, but they're still there. And one of the very first things a lot of people do when they get exposed to the device is they go through a detoxification reaction. And their body just starts dumping all this stuff out of them. They go, whoa, where did that come from? And it was there all along, but they didn't know it. And once that is cleared through, that's the end of that. And then the device becomes extremely selective. For example, I can't tell you the number of people I've been around where I can just be, I'll be standing there and the device is running and somebody's going through, well, you know, tell me the next day, well, gee, I had this incredible reaction to the device. I go, well, that's interesting. and nothing's happened to me because it is that selective.
Oh, I see. If it's not going to attack and get rid of a certain parasite or a certain condition,
Yes. Then
you're not going to feel the detox. The person who had that condition will.
Oh, yes.
That makes sense.
Now, this is a unique instrument because it produces a field. And this field means that anything within the field gets affected. So you don't have to have contact with the instrument. That means you can just sit back in a room. Most people sit about 6 to 8 feet away from the instrument when it's running, and they get exposed. It also means anybody else in the room gets exposed at the same time. Not just treating one person one-on-one. Now, Dr. Rife's original instrument, if we want to back up a little, was designed to treat one person at a time. The tube was taken up usually within a foot or so distance from the patient and then passed along the patient's body.
So your new and improved device could treat a room full of people.
Yes.
For example, and it can do so passively. Okay.
Being used for that purpose too, Laura. Up in Canada, there's in Courtenay, British Columbia, there's a volunteer group that meets, that's what they call themselves. They meet at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. This has been going on for several years. They've had over 700 people through there. And anywhere from 15 to 50 people show up at these sessions. And they just turn the machine on and run a set of frequencies that they run every week, and they have phenomenal things in them. I've read some of these reports from some of these people.
What sort of reports do they offer up? Anecdotal.
Because they're not treating anything specifically, they just run a set. They get all kinds of results and effects from people. But the most common thing seem to be with kind of chronic infections, people with chronic fatigue syndrome, people that have had definite problems with, there's been several people that have gone through there that have had hepatitis C and done pretty well. It doesn't cure them, but it seems to help their condition quite a bit. In other words, they may improve where they look almost normal and their blood tests look normal, but there's like this residual level of the virus in them. They stop using the device, the disease comes back.
Does the device, you can change the frequency, you can change the output, so do you, those group of people agree, let's run this frequency, let's run that, or is there a general frequency that they run, or what?
You know, this is a very good question. That is the big problem we have at the moment. What's a good frequency? And some of this is just arcane knowledge, it's things that people have worked out over the past, 30, 40 years using these electrode pad devices I mentioned to you. Where they go, well, hey, here's a frequency that does this, and here's one that does that. And so there's some of these frequency lists are floating around. And some of them, to be honest, are a little more than numbers on a piece of paper and have no validity whatsoever. And some of them, well, by golly, they're worth their weight in gold. One of the things that's happened recently, which is a tremendous breakthrough, is a dear lady named Charbo M. has worked out a methodology to determine frequencies based upon the size of a gene. within our DNA code?
Based upon the what within our DNA code?
The actual size. In other words, our DNA code has little genes in it.
The genes, okay.
The genes of expression within, shall we say, the DNA code of a bacteria or a virus.
Yeah.
And she's worked out a way to determine a frequency based upon the length of that particular gene.
So the frequency isn't just random. It really is derived from the size and the shape of the molecules that make up the DNA of that organism.
It can very well be, yes.
Oh, this is exciting stuff, and I believe this is medicine of the future, which you can utilize today if you know the right people, if you know the right place to go. One of those places is to James Baer and his book, Resonance Frequency Therapy, Building the Rife Beam Ray Device. Radio Bookstore carries it. You can visit his website. You can get in touch with some of these various groups out there. And more ahead with James Baer. I'm Laura Lee.
Laura Lee Online, www.lauralee.com.
As you enjoy the guests, topics, discussions here on The Laura Lee Show, you'll want to know what's coming up next week. Each week, the upcoming guests and topics are sent out to thousands of subscribers of Laura Lee E-News. Laura Lee E-News is a weekly email newsletter, and you'll receive the latest tidbits, breaking news, and descriptions of scheduled topics. Laura Lee E-News. To subscribe, visit our website at www.lauralee.com or mail us with the word subscribe in the subject box. Our email address is lauralee@lauralee.com. Laura Lee E-News is received by subscription only, and you may unsubscribe at any time. Laura Lee E-News. www.lauralee.com.
A gold chain found in a 260 million year old chunk of coal. Anatomically modern human bones and footprints in 55-million-year-old rock. Those are just a few of the anomalies of human antiquity documented in the book The Hidden History of the Human Race. The evidence that humanity goes back millions of years is both shocking and abundant. Find out how the knowledge filters author Michael Cremo and Richard Thompson call it works. Make up your own mind. Call and order yours today at 1-800-243-1438.
The Radio Bookstore staff is here all week to fulfill your requests for Laura Lee Show audio tapes and the books and videos of many of the researchers you meet here. Call us at 1-800-243-1438 anytime, 24 hours a day, and receive a free catalog. Or write to us, The Radio Bookstore, P.O. Box 3010, Bellevue, Washington, 98009. And be sure to visit us at the Laura Lee Show homepage, www.lauralee.com.
I'm Laura Lee. This is The Laura Lee Show. Our guest is James Baer, who's written Resonance Frequency Therapy, Building the Rife Beam Ray Device, the book that tells you how to build your own device. He's been in Albuquerque. You can go visit him. I think, can you attend courses, lectures? And you travel around the country. You go to various Rife conventions. There are, you're a nexus point for this information, James, as well as info on groups likely in your area. If you don't have a group in your area, maybe you can start a group in your area. And I would imagine everybody here listening tonight is of the tinkering type or knows someone of the tinkering type where you can get the directions and build one of these devices. And now it's a lot easier than years ago when you first started out, right?
Oh, very much so. There's just a lot more variety and availability of parts. Lots of people to help. There are commercially available assembled devices at the moment, too, which you can...
Of your design?
Of my design, built to my specifications, yes.
Oh, and where do you get those? You don't sell them, you just sell the instructions.
Yes, that's all I do.
Okay, but you have information on where to buy one of these.
Yes, on my website.
What price range are we talking about?
They run from about roughly $2,500 up, and that's a complete device, ready to go, just plug it in and let it run.
And if you were going to build your own device in terms of parts and hours of labor, what are we talking about?
Parts run, and the parts are not inexpensive, which is why the device costs $2,500. The parts are about roughly most people spend around $1,100 to $1,200 for parts.
Mm-hmm.
Time wise, if you have all the parts in front of you, you're looking at maybe 4 hours or so worth of work. It's not too complex. Most of the work is just basic assembly. That's attach this to that. You don't need to be an electrical genius to do this. You need a little bit of hand skill. You have to solder a couple of wires together, and you have to kind of screw some bits and pieces here and there together and cut a bit or two out of the CB radio. But most of it's very straightforward.
Now, if you want to start your own group and you don't want to plunk down $1,200 for parts or $2,500 for a completed device, what you could do is get a number of people together that want to all pool resources and pool talents and either build or buy a device, and then you could start a weekly club, right?
Oh, yes. People have done that. There are clubs like that or little groups all over the world. They're that I'm aware of, they're in Australia, they're in England, of course, Canada, all over the United States, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm. And it makes more sense to get together with a group of people, at least talk while you're sitting there 6 to 8 feet from the device, as opposed to just, reading your book or whatever, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a good excuse to get together.
Absolutely. Actually, the field extends out probably a good 20 or 30 feet, an active field.
Get a big room.
Oh, yeah.
Charge admission. At least to cover your costs, right? So.
Indeed. There's a lot of potential along those lines. And it's,
you know, this is so exciting because, I'm a Star Trek fan in terms of, let's vision the future in which we utilize all that we know, that we're out there exploring the properties of the universe and making good use of them and living in a society that, is open to these ideas. And I love those tricorders. Why not? If the universe is made up of vibrations, why not just have a device that reads the vibrations and sends out vibrations and utilize it on that? It's about time we got there. And the weird thing is we use, sonic vibration to break up kidney stones today. That's a treatment. The MRI device, the CAT scan, all of that's using this technology to read out. Why not apply, use something of this vibratory to basis in order to apply healing properties. It makes so much sense, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Actually, what you're saying about what everybody's seen on Star Trek, where Dr. McCoy scans a patient, figures out what's wrong, and then treats them all with the same instrument, is real close.
Yeah, I don't watch the classic. I watch the other one, the more recent one.
Ah, okay.
Too chauvinistic, the classic Star Trek.
Well, at any rate, it is very close. And Charbonneau, as I was just mentioning, has this new methodology of determining frequencies based upon certain genes within a microorganism or your body or what have you.
Now, how does she know the gene free? I mean, we're just now cracking the human genome and mapping all that out, but how does she know this?
It has to do with correlations between known valid frequencies and some little correlation she discovered, which she's in the process of looking into a patent about.
Hmm.
And there's another fellow, Tony Galstone, who's discovered that when you hit a primary frequency, certain types of emissions come off the body. And he's in the process of filing patents for that, too. And you put all this together in one little instrument, you've got a way of going, well, okay, here's this. It's registering on this frequency from this emission.
Yeah.
And we know that this person has this particular problem because the genetics say this.
Uh-huh.
So you can read that close, Laura.
Boy, major breakthroughs. I'm being asked about the particular frequency you mentioned, 27 microhertz on a CB band. So.
Oh, okay. It's 27 million cycles. We use actually 27.125, 27,125,000 cycles. And the FCC has set that aside. It's what's called an ISM frequency, Industrial Scientific Medical Device. Has a bandwidth of, I think it's plus or minus 163,000 cycles. It's pretty wide bandwidth, in other words, for that type of thing. Now, what's interesting about my device, and it's a phenomenon, is that we can take a gas-filled tube, one of these plasma tubes, and pump it with 200 or 300 watts of radio energy. And the amount of actual radio frequency emission coming off that tube, it's almost negligible. I can run a TV within 3 to 4 feet of that tube with 300 watts coming out of it, and there's hardly a line on the TV. If you did that with a regular radio, with a regular TV and an antenna at 300 watts, your TV would turn to smoke. The radio energy is actually absorbed by the plasma and converted into some other type of energy or some type of frequency band that somehow does not affect these things. It's a phenomenon. What the only real RF, for the most part, that gets out about this device is leakage. There's always going to be just a couple of watts getting out here or there from a loose cable or a cable stretched here or there or whatever. It's just part of the RF phenomena. But that's just a secondary effect, and there is a little something, too, apparently, that this little minor pulsed RF field that does emit from the device, but that's not really the primary effect. Now, what I think is going on with the instrument, it's called a form of electroporation. And let me explain what that is.
A form of what?
Electroporation.
Spell it.
ElectroPoration. Electroporation. It's how they do genetic recombinant experiments, where they change and introduce them into different microorganisms and cells. They take a cell and expose it to a quick, high-burst electrical field, and it opens pores in its side. And through these pores, they insert all its genetic material, and then the pores seal up, and that's that.
Oh, they have the open sesame code to get the thing to open up to make the change.
Exactly. Okay. Well, how this device works is through this field. Now, the field strength necessary to produce electroporation is approximately 1,000 volts. This is in a mammalian cell. In other words, it's about 1,000 volts per centimeter.
And we are electrical beings. We need to remember that.
Oh, yes. We most definitely are. And that's part of how the device works, is because we do have an affinity for these electrical fields, and we do respond to it. Well, if one shrinks this centimeter distance down, the power necessary to produce electroporation starts dropping. So a centimeter is 10 millimeters. Mm-hmm. So if you drop the distance down between the, shall we say, the electrical field down to 1 millimeter, all of a sudden it's hitting 1,000 volts, 800 volts. And if you drop it down even more, it keeps dropping these incremental amounts very quickly. Well, the actual pulse width, I think, is part of what's going on here. And the pulse width on the emission from the amplifier and tube is very, very narrow. And that goes through the body. But it also, we have these little interfaces between the cells and the body, which are very, very narrow. So to produce electroporation effects, or selectively do this, which I think is part of what the audio frequency resonance is about, it acts kind of like a catalyst, you might say, to keep it from happening all at once within the body.
Mm-hmm.
You get to a point where you only need, between the cells, just a few tenths of a volt. It's that. Very, very low field strength to produce these effects.
But you need to know the right frequency.
Exactly.
The right code.
Exactly.
You can't say anything. You have to say the open sesame, right?
Yes, and that's just it. Now, if you put enough power behind this unit, it doesn't matter, because then it'll do this to anything regardless of the frequency. And, of course, at that point, it becomes highly dangerous.
Right, because you don't want to open up your healthy cells.
Oh, no. You might literally kill yourself.
You'd just sort of melt, wouldn't you?
Well, yes, actually, you would. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I do, and the radio books are ourselves, my videotape, it has videotape of my device blowing up microorganisms using this type of effect.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see them swell up a little bit, and then they just go boom and blow up.
Mm-hmm. So, they kind of implode.
Yes, exactly. I mean, they shatter. Sometimes it's a resonance effect. Sometimes it's just from this this field effect, you might say, across its membrane, where
now,
they slowly swell up. And
you're
blow
saying
up.
If you have a specific frequency, then this will do this to specific organisms, say the bacteria that are causing you to be ill. If you pump up the power high enough, this would do this to your healthy cells, your skin cells, your liver cells, your blood cells, as well as the bacterial cells.
Yes, indeed.
So you're just handing the government a weapon, aren't you?
Well, no.
Okay.
And here's why. You can't shield this thing very well.
So it would kill the operator as well.
Yes, it certainly would.
Unless they put it on a robot, right?
Well, maybe, but it might jam up the robot when you get that much power floating around. So I don't know if it's ever going to make much of a weapon, but
okay.
Who knows?
I have to ask the question, because
sure.
For every innovation, you have detrimental applications and you have beneficial applications.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And there are limitations.
And, you know, with ozone also did a good job if administered well in a body that had some antioxidants flowing through it. It could also blow apart some of the bad bacteria or viruses. But then stupid people would overload on ozone and start tearing up their blood cells, you know, and die of leukemia.
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea that water is good for you, but too much of it, you're going to drown. So
exactly.
You have to take everything in the right dosage. So it's
exactly.
Good to bring this up.
In moderation, and that's part of how the device is designed to be constructed. We use typically no more than about 300 watts or so of our power. Most instruments run about 150 watts of power, and that's plenty. Let me tell you, that's plenty of power. Part of the trick is not so much that we have that it's just RF, but it goes back to what's going on back in this little CD radio. Has to do with how much audio have we loaded on to this radio wave. And that's what the CB radio does. And we just keep turning the volume up, you might say, by increasing the amount of audio that this little CB can output. And that's why some of these guys make 50 watts. We'd like to try and get a hold of one that will do even more than that, but you know, it's like you're never satisfied. It's a big breakthrough getting up to this. And it makes a tremendous difference because it makes things shake harder, you might say. It makes the resonance effect even more dramatic by upping this little CB radio to produce these immense power levels with mostly just the audio wave. It's like turning up the volume on your loudspeaker and your radio. It's a different way of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing effects by doing that.
Hmm.
So you can match the two. You can increase the RF power, but it may not do quite as much as increasing, say, down at the back end where you increase the audio going into it. Just little variations that still are being played with, you might say.
Okay. Has anyone had any ill effects other than a detox by the correct application of this Rife Bear device?
Well, let's talk about detoxifications because those sometimes can be really, really severe. There are people that have temporarily hurt themselves using the instrument from excessive detoxification reactions. And those type of illnesses that I've heard reported back from that were they just let the device run way too long and too often, and they got into a bad detox situation. They have shut down their kidneys temporarily.
Oh my gosh, because the kidneys couldn't handle the overload?
That's right. There's too much debris. You can actually, in a lot of people, see debris in the blood.
Debris in the blood. Oh, my gosh. Which is what
cancer.
So the debris in the blood would be the bodies of the blown-up bad bacterium, say.
Yeah, or in some people, it's that cancer cell.
Okay. How would this affect a cancer cell? Cancer cell is different from a bacterium, but it's a cell that's got its own frequency, right?
Mm-hmm. They have their own frequency. Now.
And it uses the same Open Sesame device to go and infect other cells and change it over, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Well, similar in a lot of ways. It's a very clever little cell. They're very aggressive. But one of the things I think that makes them susceptible to the device is also what makes them so successful as a living organism, and that is that they are able to metastasize. In other words, they're not tightly linked to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they shake well. Instead of being like a solid block of steel, you have a little bit of steel dust, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And that shakes a lot easier than trying to shake that piece of dust that's stuck onto a steel bar.
I see.
So they shake pretty easily, and they do go if you get the right frequency.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about cancer that someone's found out.
Yeah.
There are people doing research in universities at the moment with the device. It's all mostly just experimental work. Nobody's published anything. And it's mostly just to get grants. In other words, derive enough material and information to get grants. And there's a few people working on that. But one professor, he's not here in this country, he's in another country, has found he would take mice, and they were all genetically similar mice. In other words, all basically
brothers and sisters,
cousins,
okay.
you might say,
mm-hmm.
and take a tumor and implant the same tumor into all these mice.
Mm-hmm.
And he might have 10 mice, and he'll expose them all to the same frequency set, the same amount of time, at the same time every day.
Of your device?
With my device.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one or two will live, and the rest of them all die.
Hmm. Meaning what?
So what's happening is, at least in this case, is somehow the cancer is adapting to the individual organism and shifting its frequency. How about that?
Is that the only conclusion you can draw from this?
That seems to be what he feels very, very
that the cancer is so clever that it would, like some bacteria, become resistant to antibiotics that they've run into before, that you're saying a cancer would change its frequency to be resistant to this frequency that's being applied to it?
Not necessarily that it's changing to the frequency, but it's changing somehow its personal vibrational rate. And we talk about each person's own vibrational rate.
Yeah.
Well,
but
here's
I'm thinking
cancer somehow adapting to that.
So it was changing away from the frequency.
From the frequency
so
that these
adapt.
Other mice were at.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that amazing? But it gives credence to the fact that we all have our own individual vibratory rate.
Yeah.
Because somehow this cancer is adapting to that.
Hmm.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Something to think about. Well, anyhow, that's just a little sideline. But we know that in most people, when they do have cancer, most cancers lie within certain frequency bands. In other words, within a couple hundred cycles of each other, or up or down a bit. And sometimes we can hit those, and sometimes we can't touch them. And the other thing about cancer, as I was explaining earlier, is it is a metabolic disease. And if you take someone who's abused their body for 40 years with tons of cigarettes,
yeah.
and who knows how much drinking booze and what have you, well, their bodies aren't in very good shape, and they don't respond very well to any kind of treatment.
Well, then it seems to me you've got to go at it at two approaches. You've got to sort of take out what's causing the disease, the organisms that are causing the disease, be it cancer or pathogens or whatever. At the same time, you've got to build up the good tissue and give the body what it needs to normalize again, to maintain, to start to reestablish good homeostasis, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It's completely, it's a critical need and necessity, and that's something that's overlooked in conventional medicine far too often when they're dealing with these individuals.
And speaking of conventional medicine, the question comes, are there hospitals, are there universities, are there institutes that are looking into this device? And
well, not specifically. I can tell you, I know of one hospital that has a device down in their basement.
I see. They still are under wraps. What's the FDA's position on this?
Well, here's how the FDA legally looks at things. And the FDA, and the way the law works is that one, a physician can construct an instrument for use on their own patients.
Mm-hmm.
But the FDA interprets this to mean that each patient must have an instrument constructed personally for them by the physician.
Oh, how ridiculous.
Well, yeah, there was a little thing here a while ago. Some ophthalmologist went out and built himself a laser to do eye surgeries with. And they confiscated his machines and said, no, you need one for every patient.
Oh, please.
Oh, yes. Well, that's probably okay, actually. The other rule is, of course, you can do whatever you want to your body, you know, personally. If you want to take a hammer and, you know, hit, instead of hitting nails, hit your big toe, that's your prerogative.
Okay.
You can,
that's why I can go build a device to be used on me.
Exactly.
Why you can give people instructions how to use the device but not sell them one directly.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as getting this thing approved, well, I'm probably about $40 million short.
That's the cost of testing.
I would estimate that's probably just the beginning, because the way the FDA works and what's at stake here is so big.
I heard it's $230 million for a drug to get approved.
Yeah,
then
that's
they turn around
average.
And they improve, you know, things that shouldn't have been improved in the first place. So that's also kind of an insider game, isn't it?
Very much so. You have to deal with the right people and the right group of and the right organization to run your tests and the right doctors to be doing the tests. It's a little close click. You have to have all the connections together in order to pull this off, and it's very expensive. And the people that are doing this, playing this game, know that very well.
Uh-huh.
And they go, if you want to play the game, this is what it's going to cost.
Yep. So So interesting. James, we're out of time for our hour. Time flies when you're fascinated, and there's a lot more to the story to tell. Would you be interested in coming back and continuing the story next week?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, wonderful. I want to tell people in the meantime, there is a video, and the title of that video is?
The title of the video is, let's see, wow, I've gone through three or four different iterations of it. Let's see, it's something about...
just call it the James...
Go ahead.
The James Bear video.
That'll do.
Okay,
there
the James Bear video. And there's also the book, Resonant Frequency Therapy, Building the Rife Beam Ray Device. The device is now called the Rife Bear device, Rife for Royal Wife, and Bear, B-A-R-E, for our guest, James Bear. And again, this is an exciting avenue to take, to heal yourself, to become more proactive in your own well-being. And just knowing that there are such devices there gives me hope for the world, doesn't it? And you can either build your own, you can buy one, you can join a group, you can find out if there are groups in your area that already have such devices and then attend weekly sessions, you can start your own group. Many ways to have access to this device. And James, thank you for all the work that you've done. Next time I'd like to know a bit more about how this device works, the various frequencies. People are asking, well, how do you know what frequency is for what? A bit more on that. And just how you got interested in Rife and the device and started to improve upon it. There's much more to tell to the story, and we look forward to future hours with James Bear. In the meantime, is there a phone number? Is there much more than your website?
Laura, I'm at, let's see, my office phone is 505-268-4272.
Okay, and do visit his website. We have a link to it as well. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll join you next time. I'm Laura Lee.
Laura Lee Online, www.lauralee.com.
If you're interested in the book by tonight's author, we've made it easy. Give the radio bookstore a call at 1-800-243-1438. We'll ship that book right out to you. And we'll include our 32-page catalog featuring additional books, tapes, and videos with which to go exploring. Call 1-800-243-1438. Outside the U.S. and in Seattle, call 425-455-1053.
From 3000 B.C. onward, all the world's major civilizations had plank-built boats capable of sailing to America, says anthropologist Gunnar Thompson. And sail they did. American Discovery, The Real Story, is the most beautifully illustrated and complete and far-reaching compilation of the evidence for these fascinating voyages. Interested in ancient maps? Who isn't? Gunnar Thompson has breakthrough discoveries in his newest book, The Friar's Map, documenting all the ancient maps that depicted the Americas long before Columbus sailed here. In fact, Columbus probably made use of some of these maps. The radio bookstore has both Gunnar Thompson's books and a limited supply of his first book about Asian American voyages from thousands of years ago. If you'd like your copy, call 1-800-243-1438. The radio bookstore is your only source for all three of Gunnar Thompson's books. Call 1-800-243-1438.
Changes within the earth are affecting your sleep patterns, relationships, the ability to regulate your immune system, and your perception of time. Join Greg Braden on a tour of the evidence from Earth's diminishing magnetic field and rising base frequency to ancient texts recounting similar events in human history. Now you can attend a presentation by Greg Braden in the privacy of your own home. Awakening to Zero Point, the video, a jam-packed 3 1/2 hour presentation on two video cassettes for $39.95. Call 1-800-243-1438.
Are you concerned, as I am, about getting adequate nutrition? Let me tell you about something that I use daily. It's an easy way to provide what Udo Erasmus calls the missing link between nutrients provided by the average American diet and the optimal diet for the human system. That's why Udo calls this granular mixture of superfoods, foods naturally high in essential nutrients, trace minerals, vitamins, and fiber, missing link. Call 1-800-243-1438. It's granule so that you can sprinkle it on your meals from soup to vegetables to sauces to just about anything, and 3 tablespoons daily are all you need to achieve optimum nutrition. I use Missing Link because it makes food taste better, more wholesome, and it's so quick and easy.